Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
You know, one of the things I love about the NFL, Joy and I were talking about, there's a lot of young NBA coaches I really like. They're very clever. There's a lot of young general managers in the NFL, and these guys will make deals. You know, the old days, the old NFL general managers, here's your roster, you're standing pat. The NFL's become very NBA-like. You got a lot of young, early 40-year-old GMs. I talked and texted to many of them. They're deal makers. And Brett Veach, fourth year, is only 42 years old. And he's frankly, he's got his Hall of Fame coach. He's got a Hall of Fame quarterback talent. If you can get that, you just make everything else work. And he is joining us, 42 years old, which is really young to own the world. And he is joining us via the Coward Global Satellite Network. So let's go back to the very, I want you to tell me a story. So you're out there and you get a piece of video and there's this Patrick Mahomes kid on it in college. And, you know, it's the Big 12. It's probably 58 to 57, like all those Big 12 games. Give me the moment you first saw him, Brett, and your first reaction to Patrick Mahomes as a college prospect.
Well, really, Colin, it was an SEC game. I remember watching the bowl game, I guess, his sophomore year where they played LSU. And, you know, the kid was certainly undermatched, and he single-handedly kept his Texas team in the game. And you know, the kid just went up and down the field, made plays, and we're seeing him do the same thing on the NFL level.
So then all of a sudden you start comprising scouts, and then you got to go to Andy Reid, who knows a thing or two about football. You've been with him since Philadelphia. And take me to your first conversation to Andy Reid about this kid named Patrick Mahomes from the Big 12.
Well, as it were to happen, you know, when I was watching Pat over the spring, Andy just happened to walk by the office, and we were kind of joking around. And I said, "Coach, I think this could be the next quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs." And, you know, he kind of glanced and caught a couple plays and stored it in the back of his mind. But I remember later down the road in the fall in September, October, just start sending him clips and clips of the kid, and to the point where, you know, coach is dialed in, he's locked in for this week's opponent, where he actually texted me to just stop texting him and just leave him alone for a while. And there'll be time for that. But and then, Colin, another funny story too is once we got once the college season had ended, coach shot me a text. Now, remember, this goes back to the spring and shooting him a little video text during the fall. Coach calls me in his office, and he had a copy, a printout, and it was actually like a McShay and Kuiper mock draft. And and he showed it to me. He said, "You know, this kid you've been talking and showing me videos on," he said, "I just got this mock draft, and here we are late December, early January." So the kid's not even on the list. Are you sure you're watching the right kid? So we joked about it, and it certainly didn't take long for other teams to jump on board and fall in love with the kid too, and we were just happy we made it work.
So you get him in. It's very lucky where you've got one of the great offensive minds in football, Andy Reid. You also have you're fortunate you have Alex Smith, who's a great mentor, a really good human being. So it's the perfect scenario. You don't have to play him much for the first year. And then you play him, and he blows everybody away. So go to the moment that you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, okay, I may have a $300 million quarterback in my hands. When did you decide, let's just wrap this up? I'm not wasting any time. I got a lottery ticket. He's a good human being. He's a good player. Was there a moment of practice, a game, when you just said, I just want to get this contract done now?
Well, I mean, every time you draft a quarterback, that's certainly your goal and intent to extend them to a long-term deal. But, you know, Patrick he's special, he's unique, and really, Colin, as you mentioned, we just had the perfect setup with a fabulous coaching staff, and then Alex Smith, as you mentioned, just a fantastic mentor. But if you go back his rookie year, there's a couple of throws at training camp where, you know, myself, the coaches, our personnel staff, we just kind of looked at each other in almost disbelief, and a couple of the throws I think have made it to the internet, Colin, but I'll have to send you a few. There was this one red zone throw, corner of the end zone, where I still to this day don't know how he made the throw. And you just, and keep in mind, these are the best players in the world he's doing it against, right? And this is him going against the one at the time, the three offense versus the one defense. And he's just, making life very difficult for our starters and just doing it with such ease that you knew right away it was only a matter of time until, he showed the whole league and the whole country what he can do. And again, as soon as the window opened up to do his extension, we were obviously anxious to get it done.
So now, though, and you pay Chris Jones, who we've had on the show, he's a great player. So you got Mahomes, you got Chris Jones. Do you feel it does put a little pressure on you, Brett, now? You got to get some of these draft picks right. Not everybody can be expensive. Do you sense, hey, have you told your scouting staff, we got to burrow down on this stuff because we got to hit some fourth-round picks now?
Sure. And I think not only just the draft picks, just anytime you have the opportunity to acquire talent on the waiver wire or any transactional period, I mean, we have to be good. I think, we saw that last year and we had some defensive ends go down and some offensive linemen go down, but not just the draft, but, your practice squad has to be on point. Your emergency board during the season when guys get injured has to be on point because, you certainly just can't go out there and have big free agent spendings now because of the talent that we have on our roster. But yeah, certainly the draft is the main area to secure some cheaper talent, but also again, practice squads, waiver wires, claims. I mean, we have to be on point, all those things.
Andy Reid is, I've said this before, Belichick is a legendary coach. His coaching tree is not as good as Andy Reid's. And I think some of that is just Andy is the NFL's best teacher. You were with him. I mean, you played in college, then you got on the staff, and then you become a scout, and then you become personnel director, and then you go to Kansas City. What was the first one or two lessons that Andy Reid, as a great mentor, taught you about personnel? Like something that you're like, he saw it through the end of the telescope, others didn't, and it sticks with you today.
Well, I don't know if I can just rattle off something specifically, but just in a general sense, just – the working environment and how you can really learn something from everybody. And I remember when I first started working from coach fresh out of college, a little intimidated because here we have a Hall of Fame type coach, one of the best in the game. And when, he asked you to do a certain report or a project, just thinking, I mean, this guy has all the answers. Why is he asking me? But, his understanding that everybody has something different and unique to bring to the table, you can always learn something from someone, whether it be a 20-year offensive coordinator, a 20-year GM, or a young intern or first-year guy. Andy has that ability to understand that everybody brings something different and unique to the table, and I think that helps me in my career as I carry on, knowing that your ability to grow and adapt and develop in this position is going to come from all different areas, from veterans, scouts, from veteran coaches, but also young guys, young coaches, young interns, young scouts.
There's a guy you drafted. He's kind of a fascinating player. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a running back for LSU. He's not a burner. There's a lot of things I look at him and I think I can't put my arms around why he's so damn effective. But every time I watched him, he turned 4 into 7 and 7 into 9 yards. So when you first saw him from LSU, I think he's a fascinating player where I could see somebody watching him on film and he wouldn't pop. He wouldn't jump through the film. What makes him special in your opinion?
Well, it is funny, Colin, when we got together prior to the combine and we had a chance to watch the running backs, the first thing you do is you see the measurables. So you see a kid that's 5'7" and change and 200 pounds and, not a blazer, not a 4'3" or 4'4" guy. So you're thinking to yourself, all right, smaller running back, 4'5", 4'6". All right, let's just get through the tape and we'll be on to the next guy. And all of a sudden you put on the tape and the guy is just, he's one of those guys that you can't wait to get to the next game and to the next game. He's got rare vision and rare instincts. And some guys are just born with that, Colin, and you can't really, point to a specific game or play. It's just his body of work. It's something he's born with. I think we saw that in LeSean McCoy where, LeSean McCoy wasn't a 4'3" guy and he wasn't 225 pounds, but he just has the ability to understand where the holes are going to open and he plays the game in slow motion, anticipates very well. And that's what we saw with Clyde, a guy that just, he's a natural football player and those guys are hard to find.
I think you were a college roommate at Delaware. I see a Delaware Blue Hens helmet over your right shoulder and a Chiefs on the left with Matt Nagy, coach of the Bears, who I love. And, we always talk about what matters for quarterbacks. What do you see? So give me something that, like when you look at a quarterback, you talked about measurables. Is there an aspect of quarterback play that when you watch, you think is a little under-discussed or under-talked about? Something that matters to you and Andy that a guy like me, a sports talk show host, doesn't really talk about a lot, but it matters, maybe granular, it may be big, for quarterbacks.
Well, I just think the ability to ad-lib, make plays, and really throw off unbalanced platforms. And really, that was one of the things that really jumped out with Pat. Everyone knows how strong his arm is. And there's a lot of quarterbacks that have strong arms. But his ability to throw with accuracy off platform, I mean, shoot the third and 15 play in the Super Bowl there. I mean, he took about a 15-step drop and threw it off his back leg. But you know, I think we're obviously going to gravitate to leadership and intelligence and arm strength. But when you really get into it, I mean, the athleticism on the defensive line is very intimidating at this level. And these guys are on you. They're on you quick. And it's very rare to get clean pockets consistently through four quarters. So Pat's ability to throw with accuracy from different platforms is certainly special and unique. And with Andy Reid's creativity and play calling, it's just a special combination.
Well, Andy Reid is probably having just some ribs for lunch now, and he said, "You know, did you and Andy Reid ever go out and not talk football?"
Well, we don't have to go out because we see each other about 20 times a day. I see him more than I do my own family, so he's right down the hall, and probably when I get off this Zoom call with you, Colin, I'll be down at his office and talking some football. So, fortunately, that's something I don't need to worry about.
Yeah. 42 years old, Brett Veach, Chiefs GM. Congratulations. Andy speaks highly of you. Thanks so much for making us smarter. And good luck to everybody. And right in the middle of the country, the NFL's next star is right in the middle of the country, and that's why the league is so profoundly popular. And Brett, thanks for coming on the show.
Colin, thanks for your time. Hope you're staying safe and staying. Look forward to seeing you hopefully in Tampa this year.
Yep. There you go. In Tampa. Chiefs in Tampa. That sounds good to me. Isn't that funny, those stories about Mahomes? Like, he literally saw a tape and Andy's like, "Don't bother with me. I got a game.
Stop texting me.
I got a Chargers game. Stop texting me, young kid. You're a pest, you young general manager kid." I mean, that's how it all starts. You see a tape, you watch him in a bowl. By the way, the game you watched him in, they got blown out. But he's watching him make plays. I heard the same story about Eli Manning years ago. Ernie Corsi was watching Eli Manning, and the game he saw Eli and decided he was a first round pick, they got crushed.
Well,
Ole Miss got crushed, and he was like, Eli was just totally outmanned. He was driving people up and down. Everybody thinks all these GMs want Heisman winners. What general managers want to see from a quarterback is he ain't throwing to much. He doesn't have any protection.
Yeah, what are you overcoming? What are you leading?
So here people say, well, Mahomes, he had a losing record. That's what Matt Ryan at Boston College was not throwing to any. I talked to a scout about that. He's like, we were watching Matt Ryan throw to guys that weren't even Canadian Football League players. And he was throwing darts in tiny windows. Nothing against all these quarterbacks that play at USC, Alabama, Ohio State. But you watch Justin Fields at Ohio State, dude, he's doing drag routes. The guy that run 4-3 against Purdue, boom, out. It's not about the NFL is all about how do you play in discomfort. If you go to Alabama, it's playing in comfort. And so for a guy like, you know, you look at all these quarterbacks, Big Ben, Miami of Ohio, Aaron Rodgers, Cal, North Carolina State, Russell Wilson. At one point, North Carolina State had three starting quarterbacks in the NFL. That Glennon, Phillip Rivers, Russell Wilson.
It's like you're elevating people around you. You're playing from behind.
We're playing with two-star recruits. You're not at Clemson playing with – I mean, it's not a knock on Trevor Lawrence, but it's nice when – four of your five offensive linemen and your tight end are NFL players. You're just not getting hit very much. It's a reality of it. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Zion, he plays tonight against Ja Morant. He's been on a minutes restriction in the bubble, and he expressed a little frustration with how he's being used by the Pelicans so far.
I'm going to say it's very tough, to be honest, because, you know, as soon as I start to break that sweat, I look over and that horn's for me and I have to come out the game. Cause I, you know, I'm a competitor. I want to stay on the court. So then when I'm coming out the game, you know, just my competitive side of me is telling me, man, I just want to stay in. So I guess that does affect the fun a little bit, but not too much.
You can tell he's really, really trying to say the right thing.
Yeah.
In that spot, like, he is obviously frustrated, but
he's got great self-awareness, which most 20-year-olds don't have.
He does. He played 15 minutes against the Jazz and 14 minutes against the Clippers. Again, they face the Grizzlies tonight at 6:30 Eastern. I want to be careful how I look at this situation because I don't want to be a hypocrite. I do think it's important to listen to medical personnel.
I do too.
Especially in times like these. Yeah. Probably should be listening to doctors and doctors only.
You mean the internet? Everybody's not an epidemiologist
on
the
internet?
No, as
a matter of fact, none of them are. Because the epidemiologists are working on the pandemic currently, yeah. Not making YouTube
videos. It's funny because I go to like some of these websites and everybody's an expert on COVID. It's amazing. They didn't even go to medical school.
There literally are no experts on COVID because it's new. And the people who are most qualified to talk about it are the literal only people that you should be listening to.
I interviewed a billionaire, a surgeon that owns the LA Times and one of the richest guys in the world about COVID. And he kept saying, well, we don't know quite yet what it is. But yet it's amazing how many people on the internet are experts.
The word I would use mostly is embarrassing. But
yeah,
I do want to say it's important to listen to medical personnel, and especially medical personnel that are working exclusively with Zion Williamson.
Yeah, I know.
They are smarter. Yeah. They know more. Yeah. And while it is incredibly frustrating because we do want to see Zion, I also want Zion to have a long and healthy career. So I'm very conflicted, right? Because he's so great and he's so electric when he is out there. And like he said, as soon as he starts to hit a stride, as soon as he starts to get that sweat in, they're like, he's out of there, and it's frustrating, but I'm trying to keep an overall perspective on it. Yeah. I don't think they're putting him in a bad situation. Like, they all know how valuable Zion is, not only to the league, but of course to the Pelicans.
Well, if you lose tonight, then you're not a playoff team. Then there's no point playing in 40 and risking it. Like, tonight's the game you win, and then you have an outside shot. But once they lost to the Clippers, you do get to a point now where you're like, listen, let's just get him healthy, 18 minutes. Let's go to the offseason.
Right, and as much as we all want to see Zion, we have to also deal with the circumstances that we're in. I'm still going to have plenty of stars to watch in the playoffs. And again, we have Ja Morant, who's an incredible player. Just to keep it all in perspective, I'm as frustrated as everyone else, but I don't want to, I don't want to be a hypocrite about it. So Lamar Jackson is the reigning NFL MVP, and he was voted the number one player in the league by his peers. But despite all that personal success, he's still haunted by the two early playoff losses in his career. He said, I think about it a lot. That's where I want to be. That's when everything gets crucial. It's tough. I remember LeGarrette Blount DM'd me on Instagram, and he was like, playoffs is different from regular season. And I'm like, nah, but it is, because it's win or go home, and I'm tired of going home. I just can't wait to get back in that same spot and perform at a whole nother level.
Yeah, but playoffs are different. Here's the other thing with the playoffs. So in the playoffs, you get behind and coaches get a little tighter. Right? Like, it's not just the players.
Yeah,
like,
you're approaching the game completely differently than you would a regular season game.
Yeah, and so Baltimore got down, then the coaches start, you get a little tighter with the game plan. And here's another thing. In the playoffs, a lot of times, some teams are healthy. And some teams say they're healthy, but they have eight guys that are about to hit away. Another team, Tennessee got hot. They were healthy. They were playing with nothing to lose. Their coaches were taking risks. Baltimore came in like, when you come in as a favorite at home, it's a different scenario.
It is, and I think that it comes down to situations. Like, are you going to make the right adjustment in the right moment? And like you said, take the risks to win that game. You're not doing that. You're sticking to a whole different game plan when you're playing regular season games. And he's right. This is what's going to take him to the next level, and nobody has any doubt that he's going to be able to do that. I think that's why, for the most part, he's not getting any kind of overwhelming negative pushback or criticism, because he's such a young player, and it's fine to have
John Elway
struggle early in your career in the playoffs.
John Elway went 10 years and couldn't, quote, win the big games. Like,
It takes a little time. And he's not even in the league that long, so we can be a little patient with him. Over the weekends, Tom Brady posted a picture to his Instagram story show some of his followers what temperature it was in Tampa. It was 99 degrees. But people were taking notice of something else instead. Fans pointed out that Tom Brady is still using an iPhone 6.
Okay.
It's actually an iPhone 6 Plus, which was released 6 years ago.
So what is this? What do I have? My wife's on me all the time about this.
You have an iPhone 7?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
I don't know what it
She's
is.
She's always
either.
Like, it's way outdated. I'm like,
I mean, it is an older phone. It's an older version of the iPhone.
Well,
yes.
What one are we on now?
I have an iPhone 10, I guess, or I know I have.
So what
11.
Does yours do that mine doesn't?
I have whatever the newest one is.
Okay, I can call you. You can call me. I can text. I can get apps. What do you don't bake chicken? I mean, what do you do with your phone that I can't?
Well, I mean, it has like a better camera. So mine has like the three cameras. It does other stuff. I mean, no, like it has like, yeah, it takes better pictures. I mean, it's a better phone, but you, for what you're using it for, I'm also incredibly impatient. And as soon as the new phone comes out, the old phone still
okay.
doesn't work as well.
My picture is fine.
Listen, I am not iPhone or phone shaming at all. If you feel comfortable with your phone, that's fine. Whatever phone it is. If it, like you said, makes calls and gets text messages, that's really mostly what you're using it for.
Yeah.
And it can get
I did DoorDash yesterday with a friend. Perfect.
Yeah, you're good. You're good to go. Today is also Tom Brady's 43rd birthday.
Woo, he's old.
And he tweeted, thank you for the birthday wishes. I might treat myself to a new iPhone this year.
It's such a pain to get a new phone, though.
It's really not that bad.
I
do feel you. It takes about an hour, and like the process
can be kind of tedious.
I actually have to go get a new phone because I somehow cracked one of my cameras.
My daughter's, I swear to God, my daughter wants a new phone every 8 months. I'm like, what is it?
But they have like, depending on who you're with, like they have.
I think I'm a Verizon guy.
They have jump programs where they'll just give you a new phone.
A jump program?
Yeah, like every time a new phone comes out, that you just go and turn in your old phone and they'll give you a new one.
Every time I go to say I want a new phone, they're like, well, you have to keep yours for a few more years to get blankety blank.
No way.
They do. There's a lot of problems. I have a very.
No, you are straight up making stuff. That's fake news. You are making stuff up. They want you to get a new phone.
Yeah, but there's always a charge or something for it.
Yes, things cost money.
Hey, if I'm loyal to you for 8 years, I get a free phone.
I'm sure they probably will give you a free phone at this point. They give you upgrades. Again, keep whatever phone you want. I'm not judging. Whatever works for you.
All right. Joy with the news. It feels like Georgia.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
So you have an 11 or a 10? Or
I have whatever the newest version is.
Goulet, what do you got back there with your hockey scores?
I have an 11.
I don't have an iPhone. I have a Galaxy, but I believe it's still. I'm 9, so I'm a little behind. 9 plus.
What's a Galaxy? Is that a company?
Samsung.
I don't know. Am I supposed to know this stuff? Why am I supposed to know this stuff? Who knows this stuff? Well, you knew what a Galaxy was.
Yes. You're good. You're hooked up. You have your cell phone stand now, so you can do your Instagram lives without dropping it in the fruit bowl.
Is this how you just use it? You just use it like the box?
No, you take it out of the box and set it up. Okay. There is a little assemble with that, so when you're building your bar cart, you can also finish your iPhone stand.
And coming up next, NBA up, down, sideways, right around the corner.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
NBA is back. We do this game from time to time in all sports. Up, down, or sideways? Is a team trending up? Are they trending down? Or are they mostly what we expect? Hit it, Goulet. Joy, fire away.
The Milwaukee Bucks trending up, down, or sideways?
Down. They were up 8 with 3 minutes to go and were outscored 16-4. Chris Middleton. I don't want to hear about what a night Chris Middleton had. He was bad late, 1-for-6 in the fourth quarter. And what's interesting about Milwaukee, last 7 games, they're 2-5. This is supposed to be the favorite to win the championship. Not great late, outplayed late, couldn't depend on Chris Middleton late, trending down.
The Toronto Raptors, up, down, or sideways?
Trending up. They're a tough out. Nick Nurse may be the best coach in the NBA. Kyle Lowry played great. They got a bunch of veterans and 2 young guys, Siakam, Fred VanVleet, that can play. LeBron, by the way, is 0-4 as a Laker against Toronto. They give LeBron fits. They have a better record through 65 games this year than last season when they had Kawhi. That is a team that is all in on the same mission. That's a well-coached team. Like, we lost our star. We have to be better together as a unit. They're better this year than last. Wow.
How about the Boston Celtics, up, down, or sideways?
Sideways. So Kemba Walker is on a minutes restrictions because he's coming off a knee injury. So a really valuable piece for them. So they become more dependent on Jason Tatum, and Tatum had one great game. He had 34 against the Blazers and then stunk against Milwaukee. They don't match up with Milwaukee terribly well. They struggle with Giannis. Middleton's good against Boston. They don't match up. Toronto matches up really well. Their length with Giannis. Celtics just don't feel big enough to stop him.
The Lakers, up, down, or sideways?
Down. Danny Green, 20 minutes, 0 points. You know, Avery Bradley's not here. They could use him. They don't defend the wing particularly well. And by the way, Anthony Davis in the bubble, 2 fourth quarters, 2 points against the Clippers in the fourth, 3 points against the Raptors. One made field goal by Anthony Davis, who you keep telling me is one of the top three players in the league. Sorry, you can't do it. You got to give me more dog than that. I'll take a bad opening half. You got to be good late.
The Clippers, up, down, or sideways?
I think it's sideways. I think they're 1-1 in the bubble. They don't have Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams, and those are two of their top six players. Let's be realistic. They're shooting more three-pointers. So I think they're absurdly deep. And again, what are they playing for? They don't need home court against the Lakers.
Yeah, these are warm-up games for them.
You know, the Lakers, them in the same building if there wasn't a bubble. So for them, it doesn't matter. The home court's irrelevant. When you're as good as them, it's like, can we be healthy and our chemistry be on? The rest of it's all commentary. Doesn't matter.
How about your new favorite team, the Houston Rockets?
Big, big trend up. Westbrook has been sensational. They've played defense. They have been efficient late in games. Covington, Harden, Westbrook. And I'll say this, 8 of the 9 best Rocket players can shoot a three. Westbrook's the one that doesn't, and I think he only shot 3 yesterday. So I don't have any fourth quarter comebacks in both games. That's my thing about Westbrook. I just don't trust him late. He's been great. He's been great late. That Dallas game, Dallas was the better team for all but the final 30 seconds of regulation. And then they came back in overtime and Houston won. I mean, Dallas really controlled most of that game.
The New Orleans Pelicans, up, down, or sideways?
Down. Zion, minute restrictions. They're a mess with turnovers. They've had 40 turnovers in 2 games. They're a mess. Jazz, it was a game in which they controlled the Jazz for 3 quarters. And then against the Clippers, it was awful. I didn't see a ton of that. I just saw the box score and highlights.
It was a disaster.
Like from the very beginning?
Yes.
Not competitive?
No. It was not great.
Up, down, and sideways. There you go. That's about how I feel about it today. I think Adam Silver, all things considered, has done a really good job. I just looked at the NBA ratings. During the regular season, the NBA regular season ratings are like ones or a 0.8. 800,000 or 1 million people watch. So now they're getting mid-2s, and their demographic number is as good as their usual number. Meaning they have as many people now watching in the age group they want, like 80 to 45 years old. That's the money demo. They have as many people watching in that demo as that usually watch the games. So they've been very good. I don't have the baseball numbers. I imagine they're up. I thought Matt Viskersian, who was doing the game? Who did the Yankee? Was it Viskersian yesterday? Yeah, I thought he did a really good job. I thought they had a ton of energy.
Do you mean people still watching sports?
Yeah, it's, you know, some people are saying it doesn't quite feel right. A college football, Pac-12 this weekend, you know, the players came out and they said, we want rights, and they had this sort of manifesto on what they want. Some of their points are great, but some of them just were not realistic. They were complaining about facilities and coaches' salaries, and coaches have contracts. You're not going to rework those in 3 weeks. But I told you this before. I believe the SEC is going to have a season. I've grown up with Pac-12 football. I love it. But it's touchy-feely. The West Coast is more progressive. These are big progressive cities. San Francisco, Seattle, Los Angeles. This is not like rural towns in Texas and rural small towns in the South where they get their football. And this is the West Coast. The Pac-12 is pro sports, progressive politics, progressive towns. You know, in California, the employee has real power. Corporations don't like to get sued in California because the employee has a lot of power. Corporate lawyers don't like cases to end up in California. The employee often wins out here. The employee has big rights. Well, college athletes are not employees, but for years and years, we haven't paid them. And by the way, what was the first conference to talk about naming rights and, you know, image rights? And, you know, this is the reality of the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has always seen themselves as more of an academic conference. What is right for the player? I've heard this from USC. Like, they tell their coaches, we want the kids to enjoy college. In Alabama, they want to win football games. So it's not a criticism. It's the reality. The NFL, everybody's going for Super Bowls. You know what I mean? Colleges, Ivy League, they don't give athletic scholarships. That's all academics. SEC, heavy football. Pac-12 feels their, you know, USC, UCLA, Washington, Stanford, Cal. These are elite universities. You know, you're going to get a lot of pushback. You know, it'll be interesting. Maybe the athletic directors and the school presidents just shut it down if they can't come to some resolution. They just shut down fall sports. But, you know, the Pac-12's always cared as much about Stanford swimming and volleyball at Oregon as they have football. It's different. It's just, it's different out here. So we'll see what's going to happen. We'll see if there's a resolution. I'm not so sure for the Pac-12. We'll see you tomorrow for joining everybody. It's The Herd.